And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
We are live with the new Wizards After Dark, recording this one on Monday at 3:13 p.m. Eastern Time, but we got three different people in three different time zones. If you're listening live, you probably know the time, because I imagine on whatever device you're viewing this, there's a little thing in the upper right or upper left corner that tells you the time. If you're not listening live, congrats, you could be. We're look out for my social media, or my Twitter specifically, where I'm tweeting out that we're doing these live podcasts, and I'm doing them with my producer, Andrew Schlecht.
Hello, world. Here to talk about the NBA draft.
And once again, with Michele Vera for a new draft episode.
Hey, I mean, we are going to argue, I think, again. This is how it is.
So the last one we did, if you happen to be listening to this and you didn't hear the first one that we did, the three of us recorded a podcast talking about Devin Vassell versus Isaac Okoro. And we went for about an hour and 15 minutes on we had some disagreement. We had some discord. I'll call it verbal kerfuffling. I like how kerfuffle has really become a true NBA word, thanks to Andy Larson saying it to Kevin Durant. It's like a true, the greatest press conference moment ever when Andy Larson asked Kevin Durant about a kerfuffle in the game, and Kevin Durant marveled about a journalist using kerfuffle, rightfully so, marveled about a journalist using kerfuffle in a serious question.
Rightfully so is the correct phrase for that. Hey, and by the way, I have deleted all my Devin Vassell takes officially. Those have all been canceled due to the fact that he shoots the ball like I did when I was nine.
So that actually, I was going to bring that up because I wanted to revisit our last podcast. Today we're going to be talking about Obi Toppin and Onyeka Okongwu. And before we get into that, I want to re-broach. Andrew, you were high on Vassell, our last podcast. And then there was, you know, that somebody's form has drastically changed when there is a 10-second video of them that hits Twitter and it goes viral to such a degree that for some reason, the journalist that tweeted it out has to then delete the video. And all it is the dude shooting two jumpers. That is it. There's no sound. Nothing happened. He did nothing inappropriate. It's just a guy taking two jumpers. And that, from a projected lottery pick and shooter, went viral because his form legit looked like Marcus Camby's.
It was so bad, man. 'Cause if he shoots like that, where his shot was already kind of slow, that was already going to be an issue with him. But if that's it, if that's what you're getting, don't take him in the lottery. Don't do it. That's terrifying. That was horrifying. That scarred me.
Yeah.
I'm an Okoro guy officially now, because at least Okoro is going to be able to dribble and get to the basket a little bit more and is a maniac. Vassell, shoot, man. I mean, I still believe in him as a high-level defender, but if he shoots at the ball over his head, I mean, it legit looked like he was shooting with a medicine ball, and we just cannot have that.
What if he was shooting with a medicine ball?
It's a very bouncy medicine ball.
What if he was just messing with us because he didn't want to be, I don't know, too high so that the Knicks could draft him, or yeah. I don't know, yeah. another.
He's messing with his own draft stock, though, right?
Yeah, he's messing with his money.
What if he saw all the praise that like Duncan Robinson got for being a low draft pick and working his way up, and was like, you know what? Praise is my ultimate currency. What I want is to tank my own draft stock, go like 47, and then have everyone be like, look at how this guy recovered from 47 to the point that my second contract will pay so much because people will have said such exclusively positive things about me for the last 4 years. That might be the greatest long play ever. That's what I'm going
for.
I'm scrolling through here, just making sure that his agent isn't the same as Lou Dortz, though. Hold on. Because.
Oh, that could make you wonder for your first/second contract in the league.
It was amazing. John Hollinger tweeted out that, to paraphrase, for the first time in his life, he's reorganizing his draft board based on a 10-second Twitter video clip.
Well, but if the only thing that puts you really in the lottery is your 40% shooting ability, if you see that shot after what happened to Markel Fultz, that should change at least a bit your opinion. You should at least ask him to take 50 jumpers in front of you, even if it's a Zoom call. I don't care. I just want you to shoot in front of me again. Because if that is your motion, it's not just the ball above his head, which is awful, of course, but it's the fact that he's slow. It was already like a bit slower than your prototypical three-point shooter in the league. But if you have that kind of motion, it's ugly and it's slow. I mean, your value is not one as a top 10, top 15 pick.
What if like, you know how LeBron is making the Space Jam remake? What if he's like dying to play Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in the Along Came Polly remake? That's all it is.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's gonna have to gain some weight. Anyway. He's gonna have to.
Yeah. His next workout, he's gonna be 25 pounds heavier. In all seriousness, I don't think they have Along Came Polly in Italy. I don't think that movie was good enough to make it overseas. Nope. It's like a slightly below average Ben Stiller movie.
He did yell rain dance in that video a lot, which really, you know, solidifies that.
In all seriousness, like, I wonder, let's say that is actually real. Okay.
Yeah.
Which we're not sure that it is. Like, we're being glib, but we're not sure that video is actually how he shoots a basketball all the time, right? Let's say, for the sake of it, that it is. How does that happen? Like, how does someone who's such a good shooter change his form to that degree?
I have a theory. I always felt that Vassell had issues with range. I mean, you can see that the far he goes from the like his mid-range area, he had to put like a lot of force in order to get to the basket. And I wonder if he's just, I don't know, trying to reach. Because, I mean, he really moves his leg a lot during the shot. It seems that he's trying to throw the ball because he doesn't have enough strength to put it there. It's the only explanation, because the putting the ball behind your head, basically, and like really pushing with your legs, it seems to me that it's just like a strength problem. Maybe, I don't know, if you train a little bit, maybe it goes away. But I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. Whatever it is, there's no answer that's good enough for why you change your form to that. Because his skill, I mean, he is a 3-and-D player. That's his skill set.
Yeah.
And if you take away one of those things, because if you can't get your shot off quickly and you're a 40% shooter, you can remove him pretty quick, right? You can remove him from the equation easily.
Yeah.
So then he's not as useful. Maybe his only useful skill then is defense and then attracting a defender. But man, if you can recover to him quickly.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't matter.
Now, I know. That was one of the issues to me with his draft stock anyway. Because, I mean, the shot was not quick enough. I mean, Duncan Robinson, he can pull up in, I don't know, a split of a second. He needs no space to do that. Vassell was not that kind of player. And I still wonder if, again, part of changing his shot is to try to make up for that, but it's not going in the right direction.
All right, you guys want to jump on to our topic for today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Judging by how it went last time, I would assume that Onyeka Okongwu will lose his left arm by Wednesday.
And let's start on Okongwu, because he is like the darling of Wizards Twitter. Like Wizards draft Twitter wants Okongwu for sure. Because all they've seen is the Wizards get pulverized on defense. Mm-hmm. And what they want is their BAM type player, which, by the way, doesn't exist in the draft. Does not exist. They want their BAM type player. And Okongwu is the guy who's at least been billed as that. So, Michele, I just want to talk about defense, because he's not that on offense. And Sam Vecenie, as you can see with this graphic we have pulled up, actually has Okongwu going to the Wizards at 9. But Michele, let's talk defensively. Because I think if I had to choose between which one is more a BAM-type player and where that comes from, it's really him defensively, where he's not quite the height of a center, but I do think he's got some versatility, and he's athletic, and he's got some foot speed. Where do you see him panning out defensively, like right off the bat? And then we can get into potential and that kind of stuff. But the Wizards need help right now defensively as a rookie. And rookies are usually not good defensively. Mm-hmm. As a rookie, what do you see him being?
Well, it depends a lot on how you want to use a center. Because if you want him to be your, like making him defending in space right off the bat, you probably are going to have some issues. I think he will be a good enough rim protector from the beginning, because he has length, he has timing, he has good feet speed, he can recover quite easily. And if you want to put him in switch situations, maybe not against like top level guards, I think you can probably play him and get something good immediately. Because again, he takes pride in his defense, and I really think that he could be a special player there because of his versatility, because of the fact that he is really vertical. And so all these things, to me, speaks as a guy that can make an impact. Maybe not a big impact, but we are talking the Wizards here. So like the defense needs anything good, and he can be that. In the future, I can see him being even more of a defender in space, because he has all the tools to be that. And so I really think that if you just focus for 1 second on that side of the ball, I think he is one of the best prospects in the top 10 of this draft. I mean, for sure, all the guards are not at that level defensively. I mean, LaMelo Ball, Edwards, Killian Hayes, Tyrese Haliburton, those are not really good defenders. He can be a special defender.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why I like him so much, is that the modern big man defender is one that is versatile, because you got these bigger guys, like even a Rudy Gobert, who's one of the best defenders in the NBA. If you get him to the playoffs, and you can really target him and target his foot speed, and he's not as effective. Okongwu is one of those guys that I think can be effective in any situation as a defender. That's why I really like him. And I also he just plays with such force on both ends of the court. And I just really like that. I like that in a player. He's really confident. He knows what he wants to do, especially as a defender. And so, I mean, to me, it's step one in improving the Wizards' defense is getting a guy like Okongwu. And if you're looking for comps, obviously Bam is just the most unfair person to try to compare a player to today. It was similar to Pascal Siakam after last year's playoffs. Everybody's looking for these type of players. Well, you can't just find a guy and just say, hey, they're going to be that. They're going to disappoint, because you're talking about one of the up-and-coming players in the NBA. But, I mean, could he be like faster Taj Gibson, you know, as a player, like a little bit more versatile as a defender, Taj Gibson, that could maybe defend up to the three, maybe depending on what, like in spots, defend a guard. Is that unfair?
He could be a better rim protection than and put that together.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say he might be the center version of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With better foot speed. Like he might be the evolved version of Taj Gibson. Because I like that. Because if Taj Gibson came up today, he wouldn't have been a power forward.
No.
Like Taj Gibson.
No.
He either would have learned how to do some stuff off the dribble, learned how to shoot threes, or he just would have been kind of a slightly undersized center. And I think that is something there. Yeah, I mean, I hate when people say, could so-and-so evolve into Bam? Could so-and-so evolve into Siakam? Otherwise, if you can just evolve somebody into Bam, then Bam's not special. Then why do we talk about Bam as being so special? The reason we talk about Bam and those guys as being so special and such great players, and not just excellent players, but also excellent development prospects and improvement stories and all that stuff, is because those things don't happen often. That's why people are like, why don't you just replicate team building the same way as Miami? And the easy criticism to point out there is that, well, you can sign Jimmy Butler. But the other criticism to point out there is like, everyone wants to. Do you think the Kings wanted Nick Stauskas to stink? Like, the Kings drafted Nick Stauskas thinking he was going to be a good player.
Yeah.
Like,
next Steph Curry. Or no, that was
That was Trae Young.
No. Buddy Hield.
Oh, yeah. Buddy Hield was the next
Hield, yeah.
But, like, you think these teams that fail in their development projects who – I mean, there are some teams, you know, the Ernie Grunfeld Wizards were just trading away, giving away their second round because they just didn't care. And that's just like a whole other level of not caring about the development process. But the vast majority of teams would like to hit on the number 11 pick. Of course, this stuff is not replicable. The thing that I think is interesting with the Kongu is because I see people who know more about the draft process than me and know more about him than me say, well, he's a 4 or 5. He's a 4 sometimes. He's maybe a 5 the majority of the time, but he can play the 4. Unless he's next to a really specific type of 5, I don't really see how he can play the 4. Like, I get it defensively, but the league is moving in a direction where, I mean, people talk about stretch fours. That's an outdated term now.
Yeah.
You're not a modern four if you're a stretch four now. You're a modern four if you're a playmaking four. And that's the direction the league is going in. We don't just have stretch fives now. We have playmaking fives.
Yeah.
The majority of players who step on the floor as a center, whether they are conventional centers or just playing center in the moment, the majority of players who step on the floor as a center nowadays are at least willing to take a 3 if they're open. The stretch 5 is not necessarily the modern 5 now, the playmaking 5. The playmaking 4 is the modern 4 and the modern 5. And that's going to continue to trend in that direction. We're going to continue to see more playmaking 4s. We're going to continue at points, players who maybe play the 3 now are going to more commonly play the 4. Like, we're going to see a player like, the Spurs started playing DeMar DeRozan at the 4, and he's a conventional 2. Like, we're going to start seeing that kind of stuff occur. Now, as the game continues to evolve, I think I could see why maybe a Kongu could play the 4 more now in 2021 or in 2020 than he could 5 years down the road. But 5 years down the road, as the game continues to develop, and we talk about playmaking 4s and 5s the same way I'm talking about stretch 4s and 5s right now, I don't know if Okongwu fits that role as a 4 well enough to be able to be out there with another 5, unless you have a very specific fitting 5 next to him. Like, Michele, you have a really great understanding for the evolution of the game. Like, what am I missing that allows people to say, like, yeah, he could be a 4?
Oh, I don't think so. I am on the same boat as you are. Because as high as I am in the defensive side for Okongwu, I'm not that high offensively, and it gives me a pause because you can think of him as a 3-point shooter one day, probably just stand still. But I I have a hard time seeing him as a playmaking five, even a playmaking, like playmaking four or five, wherever you want to put him on the court. He's not a natural nor a gifted passer yet. Some player can evolve into one. So I'm not saying, because I can't, and no one can, that Okongwu will never be a good enough passer to play the five for a very, very good team. But as of today, there is no real indication that he could develop that skill in like a small amount of time. I was joking with Andrew, I think it was yesterday or I don't know, about Ibaka and the fact that at some point during his development in year six or seven, he was able to do one dribble and a pass in the corner. I mean, Okongwu maybe is a little bit above that level, but I mean, we always wonder, is Ibaka going to develop a passing game good enough to make him a playmaking 4/5? The answer is no to today. And Ibaka is a hard worker. He improved in so many other areas of his game, like catching the ball, shooting. He came in the US like not being able to hit jumpers, and he's like a 40% three-point shooter. So I don't know if Okongwu will ever be able to do enough to be a good playmaking five in the NBA. I mean, Ibaka would be a crazy good passer in other leagues, not in the NBA. The NBA is fast. You need to be extremely precise. And I don't know. I don't know if he has that vision.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear he doesn't today. Mm-hmm. And whether he can develop that or not, it depends on the coaching staff. It depends on the system he's put in. It depends on who he's playing with, right?
Yeah.
And the Wizards, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that their offense has been really good. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's like the space and the time for him to learn to do that with a team like the Wizards on the offensive end.
Yeah.
If they're willing to let him grow and make a ton of mistakes and become that kind of guy, maybe they can. Or maybe he's a four if you call Davis Bertans the five, right? Like, that's probably how he's a four.
Yeah. I mean, you basically have them reverse, right? Like, Okongwu is the five on defense and Bertans is the five on, right? Wait, did I reverse that?
No.
Yeah.
It was a joke. Yes, he did. Yeah. It was a joke. It was a basketball joke.
No, but it's right. I mean, Bertans cannot be a four defensively. Like, I mean, in the future, Bertans will have a hard time defending the four. Well, defending probably every pick and roll. And you can have Okongwu being the guy that do that. So, I mean, they can be like good together on the floor for sure, because like Bertans gives you a ton of space and you need vertical spacer, and Okongwu is a great vertical spacer. And if you think of him as a, like, if you try to put a guy, I don't know, like James Harden on him in the post, he will probably punish you because he's strong enough and good enough. He's a soft touch. And so I don't think that in 2021 you want to post up Okongwu 10 times a game. But if they switch on him, and it will happen because if he is a good screener, so he can screen for others, he can do maybe a little, some handoff game, not sure how much, and then he just dives to the rim and you try to switch the pick and roll, then he can create troubles for the opponent team because he's very, very gifted in terms of awareness, where to be, where he is around the basketball. And so that part of his game I really liked. Is the other part that to me is missing.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. You know what's interesting? We talk about like not necessarily knowing for sure to what levels the ability to do anything with the ball goes. Mm-hmm. And this year is going to be really interesting with that because, you know, we'll see it with players who aren't allowed to do certain things in college, who aren't able to show what they want to do in college, and then they come to the league and they do different things. You know, the Wizards example of this is Rui Hachimura, who stylistically plays totally different, played completely different as a rookie than he did at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Where he was really a five, and he was just a totally different stylistic player. Like, there's a reason that, even though I don't agree with it, people say he's a three. He played more like a wing than he did while at Gonzaga. And we've seen extreme examples of that. You know, Bam is fresh on my mind, so I'll say Bam wasn't playmaking at Kentucky like he is now. Devin Booker didn't get to do a lot of the stuff he wanted to do at Kentucky. You know, the list goes on and on. And there are a number of ways NBA players find out about guys' abilities to do stuff that we don't get to see them play in the 30 to 40 college games that they end up playing in. They have relationships with coaches who say, we've seen him do this. Scouts will get to watch practices, and they might get to see them do stuff in practice. They also might see, I think for the most part, the physical workout parts of the individual workouts when guys go town to town working out for teams, for the most part, the physical parts of that workout are often useless. You see a guy shoot. Okay, so a good shooter comes in and shoots well during his workout. If he shoots really well, and you just because he shot the ball really well one time, you're like, oh, this guy's even better than we thought he was. No, you just think he shot the ball well. You want to get the guy, the reason it's worthwhile is you want to get the guy in your building, in your facility. You want to talk to him, see what makes him tick, see how he treats people. Get to know the person better. And for the most part, that's what those individual workouts are. But if they didn't get the opportunity to physically see it, one thing that can be good about the actual workouts is they can say, one of your assistant coaches told me that you're actually pretty good at this thing, which you didn't do in games and we didn't get to see you do. Let's work on that a little bit. Show me how you do that. And you actually get an opportunity to do it. And sometimes these workouts aren't 1-on-0. Sometimes they're 3-on-3. And you can get a couple extra assistant coaches in there and get 5-on-5 action going. And you can see what's going on with these guys. And you don't get the greatest example. It's not the same thing as if you see them going up against the University of Arizona. But it's better than not being able to see it at all. And that's not something they have right now. Teams cannot do that. And so I've been saying all along, I think this year's draft and depending on what happens with college basketball season and next year's draft, maybe next year's draft as well, we could end up seeing more surprises like that. We might end up seeing someone who goes number 22 show up with a skill set that we had no idea that if we knew about would have boosted him into the lottery. And it's impossible to guess really who those guys are because the whole point of the premise is we don't know. But I think that's a really fascinating part of this draft where I think teams are over-relying on the film that they have because it's all they have.
Yeah.
But it's also making guys a lot more difficult to pinpoint in some other ways. And when we talk about Okongwu's offense, where it's he was able to do only certain things and stay within his lane. He could set screens, he could roll, and that was about it. And he was very good rim diving, by the way.
Yeah.
And he's a very good lob threat. And for what it's worth, whenever you talk about rim divers and lob threats in relation to the Wizards, John Wall has been begging for one of those for a really long time. Openly, every time you ask John Wall, hey, what's this team need? He says, a rim diver. Doesn't care what Marcin Gortat thinks of it. He's just going to say it. We haven't had a rim diver ever. I don't care what Gortat thinks of that. And he still says it. He wants a rim diver. And Okongwu is that.
Yeah.
But I don't know for sure if there's nothing else he can do. I'm just saying this based on what I've seen. And for the most part, that's pretty much what the teams have seen too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I add something really quick about what you said? As you probably may know, I am a good friend with Ricardo Foyce, who is now an assistant coach with the Phoenix Suns. And I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, but we were I was helping him with Gonzaga stuff. And one day we were discussing Domas and I said, Rick, why he doesn't shoot threes? And he told me, well, first of all, we like him do all the other stuff. Because he's a great offensive rebounder and he's shooting 73% at the rim. So in order for him to be as efficient, he should be a 40%+ 3-point shooter. And he's not that. And so we don't care about his development all that much. I mean, he will try that in practice. We will have shooting session. He would do other stuff, but on court, I need him to be a 72% post-up player. And so, I mean, Domas was awesome in college, but I mean, I don't know how many people knew that he could be a very, very good three-point shooter. And in workouts, he showed that. So sometimes, as you said, you just show what you're very, very good at because you have 30 games. And in 30 games, you don't have time to do a lot of stuff. And coaches want to maximize your success, because if you win with your team, especially if you are on some programs, that will help you anyway. Even if you don't show everything, you will have time to prep and to do stuff. Sorry, my Siri went on for some reason. and so, yeah, I don't remember what I was saying, but could improve your draft stock even if you don't show everything in college. But now it can be problematic because you don't have workouts. You don't have too much time to showcase that to teams in private workouts. So,
yeah, and I'll riff. I mean, so much of this also has to do with the individual team too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is, I say to scouts often when I talk to them that the hardest, I think the craziest trait that scouts have is being able to see something that somebody's not good at. Like, I can look at Aaron Nesmith and be like, that guy's a good shooter. Mm-hmm. No kidding. You know, that's not the hard part of a scout's job.
Yeah.
Like, the hard part of a scout's job is being able to look at something that somebody is objectively just not good at all, and being able to say, oh, but he can get good. And that is the, or maybe something the opposite, something that he is good at, and saying, no, he won't be good. And that can vary. So it's not just like this guy came into a workout and shot the crap out of the ball during the workout. There's more to it. So, like, going back to the Domantas Sabonis example you gave, he shot really well in the Thunder's workout. They thought, all right, this guy is going to shoot threes. They traded for him on draft night. They loved him. I think they always viewed him as a five.
Yeah.
But because they had Steven Adams, they were like, you know what? We'll make this work. They started him at the four from the start, and he was a stretch four. He hung out on the three-point line, but they had Steven Adams and they had Russell Westbrook, who both aren't three-point shooters. They needed Sabonis to do it, and they thought it would work. It didn't work great. But he was able to do it at an NBA level. And he was really hot from three at the beginning of his rookie year. Then they trade him to Indiana. And even though he plays with Miles Turner, who's another five, Turner hangs around the three-point line, but is a five. Sabonis is an inside the three-point line player. He plays a different style. So much of this has to do with like, it's not just individual abilities. It's fit within the organization. I'm fascinated by Okongwu. I think he'll be good defensively regardless of where he's at.
Yeah.
Because he just kind of, he moves his feet well. I think he's going to defend the rim well. I'm not worried about him being 6'9". I think that becomes less and less of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's going to be able to defend multiple positions, and I think you'll probably be able to switch him onto anyone. You know, if you're in a pinch, I think you can, if you're in a pinch, you can switch. I don't think it's ideal at all, but I think if you're in a pinch, you can switch him onto a guard and feel more comfortable about that than if the average center in the league is on a guard.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's pretty long. And so I'm not really, I think he's going to be a good defender. He seems heady. His reputation is that he's really, I mean, I've never met the guy, but his reputation is that he's really smart. So he'll probably be good on that end. I wonder if these, like, he's going to have to be a really good screen setter, and he's going to have to use his powers in that sense for more than just, I'm going to pick and roll. Like, he is going to have to beast guys on pin downs to open up Bradley Beal or whomever he's playing with. He's going to have to be an active cutter. Like, he's going to have to be able to use that kind of stuff for better ways if all he's going to be able to be is a rim runner.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got the quickness and tenacity to do it,
yeah,
too.
I agree.
I mean, you can see that he has that in him. This is why I like him so much, is that you can see him, as long as, I mean, if he's on a playoff team, he's going to have an elite creator on the perimeter, likely, because almost all playoff teams have that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if his job is to set screens, be a really great defender, defend the rim, and hang out in the dunker spot at times as well, like, you can keep that guy on the court.
Yeah.
That guy can stay on the court.
Yeah.
It's these bigs that get on the court that can't defend or that are going to get abused at the rim that get pulled. I mean, you saw Montrezl Harrell, and there are a lot of factors there, but Montrezl Harrell was a guy that wasn't playable in the playoffs. Things just change. You can get a guy that's good in the regular season, that pops, that puts up big numbers, but when it comes down to it, the playoffs are just different. And it just really depends on what your goal is. Like, as a team, what is your goal? How far away are you from being a playoff team, from being a contributor, to having contributors as a playoff team? How far away are you? And the Wizards seem far, but to me, he's a guy that you can say, there's a guy that's a playoff rotation player.
Okay.
And how many of those guys do the Wizards have? You know, if you add him to the mix and say, yep, there's another one.
So are you saying that Topping is not a rotational player in the playoffs?
Wait,
before
we get to Topping, which we will on a sec, I want to ask Andrew a question. Who's going to be a better defensive player, Okongwu or Patrick Williams?
Oh, boy. I'm a big Patrick Williams guy.
I know.
And Patrick Williams is obviously more versatile, but I don't know if Patrick Williams can play the five all that much.
But let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Is Patrick Williams taller than Okongwu?
He probably is just as tall. But I'm not sold on his fundamentals as much as I am with Okongwu. I
mean, Okongwu.
Yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't seem to have the same quickness in terms of his understanding of the game. And he didn't play a definitive... He played in a system at FSU that helped you defensively because they all do very, very specific stuff. They are trained to play defense. They play it in very little chunks so that you can bring maximum energy. And I wonder if – and he wasn't even a starter for – I don't think he started every game for them. I wonder how that will change when he has to play 32, 35 minutes a night and he has to play in space, because when you are not a big, then you probably have to do a lot of off-ball tasks. So I wonder if that will allow him to be good immediately. He has the tools, for sure. He is quick enough with his feet and he has a great size and length, but I don't think he will be able to be a playmaker defensively from the start. And so I think that Okongwu would be better and probably he has the chance to be better, period.
Yeah. When you were talking about the guy that we don't know what they could bring and maybe somebody could come and have this skill set that we, wow, like I didn't know that guy could play like
that. Yeah,
that
is Patrick Williams.
I think about Patrick Williams because he was highly regarded going into Florida State as a freshman. He was thought to be a top 10 guy in the draft, and he has slowly kind of risen there through, I don't know what, I don't know how. I don't know how anybody's rising through anything. Everybody's just looking at tape, I guess. I don't know. But he's one of those guys that is more than likely going to be a 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
And he does have, there is some like level of like untapped potential there.
Yeah.
Because he's very, very young.
Yeah.
And he is physically already seems like he's there and ready to play in the NBA. And there's just something about that. These like 18-year-old guys that are 6'8", 7-foot wingspan, 225 pounds. They're just like, oh, okay. Well, let's see what this guy's got. And Patrick Williams should be, I mean, I think the Wizards should consider him as high as 9.
Mm-hmm.
I like Okongwu better today But Patrick Williams could be one of those guys that you're like, how did he slide so far in the draft? Look what he can do. So to me, they're not really similar players.
No.
Because I don't think that you're going to want to put Patrick Williams at the five because he just projects more as a wing. But
yeah, it's situational probably.
In a league that's looking for wings.
Yeah, I mean,
why I would consider him as
Daryl Morey is potentially drafting him and teaching him how to, you know, hit corner threes consistently and play the five.
I'm not concerned about the shooting.
True.
I don't know if there's tall PJ Tucker in there or if there's Stanley Johnson in there.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Stanley Johnson in him, to be honest.
Yeah.
I can see a guy that is not productive. He can be a guy that you drafted in. You draft him and you say, wow, he will turn into 10-point a game player because that is what he does. He can hit a very smooth off-the-dribble jumper that makes you wonder, like, wow, he will be able to take threes off the dribble. But he's like, you have so few data points that in a draft like that, you can say, well, I don't know, but if I have to take a swing, I take a swing on a guy that if he pans out, he can be an extremely good player. If he doesn't, well, he'd probably be useful anyway off the bench to some degree because he has the size and he seems like a good kid. So we probably can find a role for him. It will not be a wasted pick. It's not Jaden McDaniels where you try to swing and you get a player that is out of the league in 2 years. But I don't know. I mean, it's very hard. I think that the reason why he is raising in draft boards is more because of the idea of him, of what he can be, mm-hmm. of the flashes that he showed, more so than the player that he will be today. In the NBA, in December, in the NBA, or January, or February, I don't know.
He did shoot 83%.
I mean, I'm not concerned about the shooting. The shooting, to me, is not an issue. He has a very, very soft touch on jumpers. So I think if you ask me, will he be like a 50 plus 36 plus 80? Yeah. My issue is, will he be a guy that takes 20 shots a game? Will he be a guy? And it's not even necessary to draft him at like 11, 12. It's like you can get a role player there and it's fine. I mean, I don't have in front of me the odds of drafting a superstar a role player at 12, but I think that is the likeliest outcome. And so like a starter, maybe border, like a, if you tell me easy, likely, a guy that can play the same role that Covington did in his career. Yeah, that is probably there's a good percentage that he has a career like that. Starts off the bench, then becomes a starter, then becomes a starter for a very good team. And then maybe, I don't know, what else?
What's the bigger need for the Wizards, Fred?
They've said they're just going to take the best player available.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the need, if you're talking about do they need someone who can defend on the wing or need someone who can defend down low, the need is whoever can do whichever one better. Like they need someone who can defend on the wing and they need somebody who can defend down low and whoever is going to do it better. I mean, it's a little bit, I still think rim defense can make the biggest difference for you, but rim defense isn't just blocking and altering shots at the rim. Rim defense can be preventing anybody from getting to the rim to begin with. Exactly. So you know, perimeter defense is part of rim defense, and they just did such a bad job this year stopping the ball at the point of attack, preventing it from getting to the middle of the floor. There were so many times where guys got to the middle of the floor with an advantage, and I don't care how good your defense is. If somebody is already in the middle of the floor with an advantage, like, you are going to be bad at defense. The best defenders in the league put in that position will be bad at defense compared to the rest of the league. So I think whichever guy ends up being better is kind of where it's at. Thomas Bryant is a very good offensive player, but if he is going to defend the way that he has the first 2 years, like, he might be able to start. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know if he, if starting with this group is the greatest fit, because nobody else is defending either. And maybe the Wizards' destiny is just to play a ton of 130 to 127 games. But if you want to actually build the best possible team, that's it's probably not the best way to do it. So I wouldn't say necessarily like they need a starting three and they need a five who can block and alter shots. And I think it's pretty similar. And whoever they can get for the best value or whoever they can get who can make the most impact at either of those is really where it's going to be. You guys want to talk about Toppin now? Mikele loves him. All right.
Let's not push too much on this.
Mikele and Obi Toppin got engaged this weekend, and they are to be married.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He shot 70% on twos this year.
Yeah.
That is
pretty sick.
Yeah. That is So he had a 68% career effective field goal percentage in his 2 years at Dayton. That, for those of you who aren't as into advanced stats, that is out freaking outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dude just scores from everywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Toppin is an ideal candidate to the Wizards. I don't think he will be there at 9. Maybe I'm wrong. But I see in him a guy with a lot of potential to be a very, very good scorer in the league and a very good leader in the league and probably an above average passer for his position and a decent shot blocker. He is a terrible defender in space as of today, which is something that scares me. And it scares me also that he wasn't an 80% free throw shooter. If you see him shoot the ball, you think that he has like a very good percentage, and it is around 72%, 70, 72, something like that. So those are the things that scares me a lot. But I think that when you analyze player, you have to think about their career and what they did in college. And in college, he was the leader of a team that was 29-2. This is important. I mean, winning is not the only thing, but if your team with you at the top performs like that, you are doing something good, something very good. And this is important in the league. So I know that he has deficiencies on the defensive side. I know that you will probably not trust him to anchor your defense, but you can get defenders for cheap. And this guy can change an offense because he can play him at the five and he can shut threes from the corners, from everywhere. And sorry about that. I have all the issues tonight.
You've got alarms. I think I heard a photo go off just now.
Yeah, because I was trying to stop the alarm and I accidentally took a picture of the screen. Sorry, terrible podcasting. So, Toppin. I mean, and he jumps off the gym. Like this guy, you want a rim diver? This is the rim diver. Like he can really catch anything. Like John Wall is a great passer and this guy is a great catcher. I know that he's 22, but he's like a late bloomer. I mean, there are guys in their 20, when they are 21, 22, that got drafted and then evolve anyway. I don't think we have seen the Obi Toppin finished product as of yet. And even if it's finished, like this guy is incredible in terms of his offense.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I actually think that I would pick him to be Rookie of the Year from this class because I think he's going to be just crazy productive. I think he could average 17-9 depending on if he's in the right situation. I mean, that's not crazy. My issue with him. And the question that I have about him is he a star? Is this guy, can he be a number one or number two guy on a team? If he can, you got to take him. You got to do whatever you can to get him. If he's not, if he's like your fourth or fifth starter just because he can really score and teams can play him off the court and you have to take him off the court because he's not your number one or number two guy, that's where my concern is with Obi Toppin. on a team that's not going to make the playoffs, it doesn't matter. Like, the dude's going to be crazy productive. He's going to look great. He's going to put up highlights. Fans will love him. He's going to shoot threes. Yeah, it's all wonderful. But if you're in the conference finals in a game seven, mm-hmm. is he going to get played off the court because he's not one of your top two guys? And all he can do is score, but they're going to target him every time on defense.
Quick question.
Stars, it doesn't matter.
You know who he sounds
stars,
like?
Stars, it doesn't matter.
Andrew, you know who he sounds like? He sounds like a Washington Wizard.
he's a total wizard, man.
Quickly.
For many reasons is that he, sure, I mean, maybe you can play him at the five, but he's really a four, which is what you can say about like almost every wizard player,
yeah.
right?
But
it's like, eh, maybe they're a five, but no, they're really a four.
Let me ask you a question. Like in 2008, a player was drafted at eight, Danilo Gallinari. We are talking the same range. Mm-hmm. I think that Topping could be a player like that. Like he was playing the three, so it doesn't count. But if you look at Gallinari today, he's not a great defender, mm-hmm. but one-on-one, mm-hmm. he's still able enough to be on the court. Houston did not play Gallinari off the court. And he can change a lot for you with A, passing, B, the fact that he can screen and dive, and he can really space the floor. So on offense, mm-hmm. he can do a lot of stuff that help you winning. It's not just he's also a good decision maker. He doesn't take bad shots. He took 10 mid-range shots. He's mm-hmm. on the money with his decision making. So I don't have the certainty today that Obi Toppin would be a terrible player. I've seen a lot of clips. And yes, he had a lot of mental lapses defensively. But Dayton was up 25. would you play incredibly good defense when you're up 25 and you just dunk the hell out of the other team? Probably not. So if he was that bad defensively, how in the world that team was good like they were? Because you can have college player that are very good offensively, but their team is not good because they cannot guard anyone and they do not care. This didn't happen in Dayton. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Probably will be a below average defender. But if he's way above average offensively, which I think if the shot is real, which is a big if because of the free throw percentage, you can have a very special player.
So yeah. I want to follow up on this then, because let's relate this to the Wizards. Because McKelly, the Wizards say they are going to draft the best available player, which mm-hmm. I have no problem with, by the way. That's fine. The Wizards need talent. Go get talent. John Ball hasn't played a basketball game for 2 years. If you think the best available player is Killian Hayes, go get Killian Hayes and make mm-hmm. it work. And this is kind of a similar situation when we talk about Topping. I agree. I think he's probably, I would be surprised if he were around at nine. That's why we're talking about him mm-hmm. the way that we're talking about him. He's an excellent offensive player. Sam Vecenie has him going number five to the Cavaliers right now in his mock draft over at The Athletic. I don't think anybody has him being around at nine right now, but it's plausible. Out of the 1,000 universes where mm-hmm. we are doing an NBA draft, there are some of which where he falls to the Wizards at number nine. Andrew, you kind of alluded to this before. The Wizards have Bertans, and let's operate under the assumption the Wizards are re-signing Bertans. All right? Mm-hmm. So the Wizards, because I would be so surprised if they didn't. They have Bertans, who is whatever the heck Bertans is. They have Rui Hachimura, who is whatever the heck Rui is. If you pay Bertans what he's going to command on the market, which for him to be on the Wizards next year, they will. My educated guess is he's like 12 to 15 million a year. Mm-hmm. He's got to be a very significant part of your rotation. And he's a good enough player to where he should be a significant part of
your rotation. But it's not a bad salary. Like 12 to 15 is not bad for a guy like him.
That's fine. I mean, that's why mm-hmm. I'm estimating that's what he gets. I mean, I think if he gets less, then it's an incredibly team-friendly deal or something crazy that I don't anticipate happening with salary cap. And if he gets mm-hmm. more, he probably made it out well for himself, or maybe it's a short-term deal or something like that to make mm-hmm. up for it. But my guess is the 12 to 15, you give him $12 million a year, he's going to give you 12 million a year production as long as he stays healthy with the way that he just shoots the ball and gives defenses nervous breakdowns like few other shooters who have ever lived. And then you got Hachimura, who the Wizards really, really, truly believe is a significant part of their future core and who is going to continue to get a lot of playing time. Those two guys are going to have to play together. It's not like one is going to get 24 minutes of power forward. The other is going to get 24 minutes of power forward. It's a lot more fluent than that. Those guys played 484 minutes together last year. And already in those guys' minutes together last year, and I look, two-man lineup data is not a good thing to go to form an opinion on solely. When you look at and you say, right, these two guys played together and here's what happened when they played together, you can't just take that out of context and say, well, here's what it is. The offense was good when these two guys were on the floor, and thus these two guys make you good at offense. You have to use actual evidence and see if that's backed up either in the greater numbers or just with the eye test and what you're seeing. When you have Hachimura and Bertans out there, which you'll have to align, then I don't know who guards the big wing in those scenarios. And yeah, I don't even know how your team defense is going. Well, I do know how your team defense is going to be. It's really going to struggle, yep, especially when mm-hmm. two of the other five guys are Wall and Beal. When Bertans and Hachimura were on the floor together last year, 484 minutes together, which isn't a ton, because Hachimura missed a good chunk of the season after Bonga kicked him between the legs, and the Wizards got away from it too because it's not a viable defensive combination. Andrew, what do you think the Wizards' defensive efficiency was with those two guys on the floor together?
106?
121.
They
allowed 121 points per 100 possessions when those two guys were on the floor together, which is, by the way, by far than the defensive efficiency of the worst defensive team of all time. So,
yeah,
so they defended like by far the worst team ever, by far the best team ever to step on a basketball. I am not saying that the Wizards will be worse defensively, but those two guys are. Then Kelly is turning off his alarm.
Yes.
Like, I'm not saying that. Kelly is worse at turning off his alarm, for sure.
I am.
But
okay, now we did.
But what I am saying is that handicaps your defense. Now, let's bring it back to overtime. Now, even if he's at where he's at, like, if you draft a guy number 9, you're not drafting him just not to play. And we all think, I mean, that he's going to be a good player.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I'm not at all arguing they draft Toppin number 9. And we also all think that he will and should go before number 9. So if we think he's going to be a good player and his value is before number 9, then obviously I have no problem if the Wizards take him at number 9.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, like, Mikele, how does that work?
Day plays zone defense.
A lot of zone defense.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
No, I don't know. And again, I would not, like, I don't know. It's a legitimate question to have in your mind, like, how they will play defense if they don't have any good defensive player. And this is a real concern, but you're not drafting at 9 in this draft to solve your problems. If you think you're doing that, then I don't think you, in general, draft is not solving problems. Can Toppin be on the court with Hachimura, Bertans, Wall and Beal? I think the answer is yes, because he can be your rim running center. You can put him like below the basket on defense and try to make him some sort of rim protector in a very, very, with a very, very bad duo that will probably give him a lot of trouble and a lot of work to do. But can he stay on the court? The answer is yes. Will you win with him on the court? No. If you draft Okongwu, will you win a lot more? I don't know. He will probably be very good for you as well. I am torn between the two. I'm not saying that Toppin is the better player today. He is the better offensive player today, for sure. Can the Wizards maximize both players? Yes. Can they? Who is the best player in 5 years? I don't know. Toppin will be in his prime. Okong will be still very young, but I don't know today. And if you know that Toppin will be the better player in 5 years, you should draft Toppin anyway, because the contract of Wall will be up. You can trade Bradley Beal. You can trade Bertans, even if you sign the contract this year, because he's a shooter and everyone will want a shooter, even if you take 16 million as a starting point, which I think is more likely to happen. And so you don't know what your team will be in 3 years. If you think that Toppin is better, I don't care. I don't care about the defensive rating in next year draft, in next year NBA, because you are not playing, or you're not drafting for the next 2 years if you're the Wizards. There is no way, unless something crazy happens, like John Wall is a superstar again and Bradley Beal improves, that you are a sure thing playoff team in the East.
I think that's a good point. And I think the other thing to talk about here too in relation to the Wizards, at least the Wizards in the immediate future, and you're right. You don't just take Okongwu because he's going to solve your defensive problems. And that's kind of what I was getting at with literally the first thing I asked you when we came on too, which is how good is he going to be defensively right off the bat? No rookie is going to save your defense. And we talked about that with in relation to Okoro last week. Maybe the answer to the question, by the way, because I asked you, what does that look like with Toppin on the Wizards? Maybe the answer is, it looks something like the 1980s Nuggets. Mm-hmm. Maybe the answer is, that's where they, because we talked about, man, what's that look like defensively? A lot of zone defense. That's the pessimist view. The optimist's view is, if John Wall is just like, if John Wall is 90% of good John Wall, which is still a good player, it's not going to get you a supermax on the open market, but if that's a good player. John Wall is 90% of John Wall. Bradley Beal continues to where Bradley Beal is 27 years old. He gets a little bit better each offseason. That just continues to happen. Or he's just as good as he was last year. Bertans does the same thing he does last year. Rui gets a little bit better, which they expect. And now you add Toppin to the mix, and he's what we expect defensively. Like, that is a lot of offense.
Yeah.
That team is going to – that's a top 10 offense.
Yeah.
I think. Maybe better.
That's a top end offense.
Maybe better. So I think, that's the other side of it too, where that team could just kill teams offensively.
Yeah. Last question I have about these two guys. Do you prefer a guy that has a pretty solid neck like a Okongwu, or a guy that has no neck like Obi Toppin? Where are we at?
With long necks are useless. This is the only take that matters.
That's, you know what?
Okay.
That's true. Height is useless because head does nothing. Like your neck is nothing. Your forehead does nothing to contest the shot. It's useless. NBA players should be measured up to their shoulders.
Yeah.
Obi Toppin, when the good Lord made him, he just stuck his head just right on his shoulders.
It's true. A normal size neck would be better, but between long neck and no neck is the deal.
Less opportunity for neck problems. You know?
He's like 6'11".
Yeah.
He's basically 6'11".
Yeah, with a regular neck,
you
could
say that about Obi. Yeah,
that's true. I would take the short neck because it means if he's the same height, he has taller shoulders.
Yeah.
We can call Obi Toppin, he's a 7-footer. Let's just say it. He's a 7-footer.
You're such a hater.
All right.
I am definitely a hater.
This is the perfect opportunity to wrap up. If you just listened to this out of nowhere, you're not a subscriber to Wizards After Dark, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you regularly listen to podcasts. If you want to help out, you can head to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. You can write a review if you're feeling really good about it and you want to help out the pod too. That's bigger for us than you might realize. I will be back with another episode next week. Oh, you can also if you want to read my stuff over on The Athletic, you can go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark and you can sign up there for a discounted rate. I'll be back with a new episode next week. I imagine I'll force these guys back for another draft pod at some point. But I'll be back with a new one next week. I'll talk to you guys then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.